You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, everyone. I am Martina Cunha, and you're listening to Backstage Talk. Jonathan Larson asked, "How can you make someone take off and fly?" in one of his songs from Tick, Tick, Boom. And I, for the past 2 years, have learned one way to do it, through the power of community. Welcome to the Latinx in Musical Theater special for Season 3 of Backstage Talk, where we will be featuring artists from across all positions in musical theater, from several Latin American countries and different Latin heritages. I am proud to showcase my Latinx family. I hope you enjoy.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Backstage Talk. Today's guest is Luis Eduardo Mora. He is a Colombian immigrant in the States. He is also an actor. And Luis is the producer of Bilingual Broadway, a production company that aims to create digital and live content for Spanish-speaking audiences in the United States and Latin America. Through translations, original content, and educational programs, it will be streamline the engagement of Spanish-speaking audiences with the Broadway community. Luis, I am honored and super happy you are a Colombian brother in New York, and I am super, super excited to have you over here in Backstage Talk. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I love speaking to a fellow Colombian. I mean, there are many of us out here, but to speak to another one is just always a treat.
Yes, I agree. It is a very special treat. And truly, I am very happy and honored to feature your story on this podcast. So tell me what made you choose the thespian path in life.
Well, I honestly feel like I didn't choose the thespian path in life. A lot of people know this about me. I wanted to be a pop, like, reggaeton star when I was growing up. Like when I was 15, 16, I was like hitting the pavement, like recording demos, like trying to get managers and producers and stuff to listen to my stuff. And that was really like what I thought my life was going to be. But then I just literally fell into a theater class in my high school out of nowhere. Like, this happened out of nowhere. It's not something that I chose at all. But in that class, I found, you know, community. I found acceptance. It was the first time that, like, I, you know, hung out with other, like, queer people and that it was, like, cool. And it was just, like, such an accepting space. Mm-hmm. That it just made me feel really comfortable. And that's when I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll give this theater thing a chance. And I was like, at first, I was like, this is corny. This is like not cool. This is cheesy. Like, what is happening? But then I fell in love with it. Then I guess the theater bug like hit. And a big thing for me with music in general is that I really love like live performances and live singing. Like, I honestly, like, all my favorite even, like, albums and stuff that I listen to are, like, all the live ones. My favorite one is Shakira Live and Off the Record. Yeah. when I found theater and I found that, you know, in musicals, it's a live performance every night, I was like, oh, okay, well, this is my gig. I have to stay here. And so that's how I stayed. That was the beginning of my path.
Amazing. Amazing. And of course, Shakira had to pop out in a Colombian conversation, and I love it.
Listen, I mean, my queen, between you and me, like, I have a full pitch to give Shakira if I ever have like 5 minutes with her, because I'm dying for the Broadway musical written by her.
Oh, a jukebox with Shakira, that would be, as you said, a
I
treat.
Would die.
Yeah, it would be
it's
so fun.
It's my dream. I have a pitch. I have a presentation.
Well, we have to get her somehow.
Please do, and please call me.
Okay, so tell me more about your journey in musical theater. So you fell into a class in high school, and how did that transform into bilingual Broadway?
Oh my God, well, that's like 10 years between point A and point B, so I'll try to keep it like quick and concise. I guess it started like going to college. I started going to a conservatory program for musical theater in Miami, which I did not enjoy at all. I think it was, you know, and we'll talk about this a lot more in the interview because it's what I'm all about. But I really don't like the idea of like using people's traumas to like get something out of them, mm-hmm. Which is what like musical theater and like colonized teaching is all about.
Yeah.
In, you know, sort of like training for musical theater or even for acting in general. Like, I feel like there's a way to do it in which is like careful and responsible, but that was not what was happening, you know, back in the day. I'm also a little bit older than I look. But, you know, this was not what was happening at the time. And so I did not enjoy that. And then I was like, okay, well, what do I do? Because I left that program after the first semester. I ended up like going to a community college just to like be in college, because at the time also it was like, if you're not in college, you're a failure.
Very Latin mindset.
Very like, yes, very Latin American, like, yes. And then I ended up going to school at Florida State University. Mm-hmm. It's where I ended up like settling and going to their theater program there. I enjoyed it. There were also, of course, issues with racism and discrimination, which are, again, like it's another like big reason why I'm so passionate about educational programs, is to avoid that sort of thing happening to somebody else. But then after college, I went back to Miami for a little bit and I was like, let me do theater here. Let me see if I can find a way to like really bring theater to South Florida. And at the time, like I felt like things were kind of happening in theater, but I quickly realized that it wasn't the time at the time it wasn't the time for South Florida to really have like at least what I wanted to produce. Mm-hmm. I just felt like, and I could be wrong and like people could read me for this, but I felt like South Florida was very much about like partying, and like I just felt like it wasn't the place to create the kind of art that I wanted to create and for people to consume that kind of art. I just think that culturally, it just like wasn't there. And so then I was like, well, I guess I will try my luck in New York. And it had been a dream of mine to come to New York. And I used to come here a lot, you know, but whenever I had like a college break or whatever. So I came here and I started auditioning and I started to like hit the pavement, and I found moderate success, like, you know, did a national tour, got my equity card, like did off Broadway, did readings and worked with like people that I admired. Like that mm-hmm. was a huge thing for me, was like literally people that I looked up to, I ended up like being friends with and calling and FaceTiming. So that was crazy. But what I did find was that there's this like idea of, you know, especially with Latinx people, it's like, we'll make the space for you, specifically if you're light skinned, specifically if you like don't have an accent at all, specifically if you're kind of like an assimilated Latinx person. Mm-hmm. Was when I felt like doors really like opened for people, and when I like, I guess like played that part is when doors opened. But I felt like when I was like authentically myself and spoke the way that I speak, and like whenever I like used the references that I wanted to use and stuff, like then the invitation just wasn't there. Like it just wasn't as warm and welcoming. So that's when I was like, well, I need to do something. And then the pandemic hit. So I guess I had a lot of time to think. And I was like, why don't I create something that celebrates Spanish-speaking Latinx performers? Which I it's very specific, right? It's like different from like Latinx performers in general, but like us who, like you said, are people who grew up in Latin America or like grew up in Spanish-speaking households. And then I started to do research and I found all this information that was just really enlightening. One of the things that I found was that Spanish-speaking theater in the U.S. is called non-jurisdictional theater for actors' equity. So that means that me as a member of the union, I can go like work in Spanish-speaking theaters, but it won't count towards like my health or pension. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, that's blatant discrimination. So that's one of the things that I found. And then I found like, you know, just culturally in New York, 25% of households speak Spanish exclusively. So I thought, well, that's really interesting because that means that there's 25% of the population that cannot or that would maybe rather see theater in Spanish and maybe and there's nothing for them, right?
Yeah.
And that's like very specific to where I live. So yeah, and then I was like, let me just start translating. And I spoke with my friend Belen Moyano, who is an angel in my life. She's currently in the national tour of Hadestown. And she kind of taught me the ropes. She's like, this is how you translate. Like, this is how you like break down the rhymes and this is how you do it. And she consulted me on my first translation, which was For Forever from Dear Evan Hansen. And that was it. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm starting a thing. And it wasn't even until like way later that I was like, okay, well, this thing that I started months ago is called Bilingual Broadway. Like, I guess I'm branding it and doing something with it. And now here we are. I think I have 25 videos that are out on YouTube currently. They include, honestly, most of it is me because COVID and isolation and all that stuff. But the plan for the future is to take me out of it a little bit more. But I do include a lot of collaborations, you know, duets and also some group stuff. And I'm just like really happy with the work. I also did 3 episodes of a show live on YouTube and Facebook and Twitch and everything. And yeah, the dream is to just keep expanding on that. And I want to do live shows next. I want to do it in a post-COVID world, though. I don't want to do it now. So that's how that is. That was a very long answer.
No, that was amazing. I mean, that's what we're here for.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So now that you mentioned your work and your initiative with Bilingual Broadway, what is your approach to characters and performing in musical theater when you are translating it from English to Spanish?
So, okay, that's a great question. So the approach is to, again, so thinking about my point of view, like who I'm making this for, you know, on a personal level, I'm making it for my parents because I want my parents to be included in what I do. But I'm also like on a larger level, I'm making it for that person who like maybe like has no way into the world of musical theater. You know, like there's a whole population that maybe doesn't know Sondheim and like the genius that that is, right? There's a whole population that like understands that Hamilton is like this crazy thing, but has no way of like really enjoying it. So that's my point of view. So with that, when I'm translating, while I do want to stay as close, and I'm very, very like adamant about staying very, very close, if not like perfectly in line with the intention of the composer or the lyricist, I also want to keep in mind who is listening to this. And a great example of this is I did When I Climbed to the Top of Mount Rock from School of Rock. I don't know if you know that song, but it's great. It's sort of like the I Want song from School of Rock, yeah. Right? The musical by Andrew Lloyd Webber. And there's a part that mentions like all these rock stars in the song. And it's like, I forget exactly what it is. I can look it up, but it mentions like three rock stars in a row. And for my translation, the last one, I wanted to include Camilo Sesto. Yeah. And so I made
Latin icon.
Yeah, you know what? I just wanted to make sure that like somebody that maybe was listening to this would be able to like relate to exactly what the intention was, which was, you know, for Andrew Lloyd Webber, the intention was to name these like iconic stars. But I wanted to make sure that like somebody that was listening in Spanish could also like relate to the iconic stars. And like, I'm very proud of that lyric change because, as we know, Camilo Sesto was also Jesus, Jesus, and Jesus Christ Superstar,
yeah.
In Spanish. So being that that's a Lloyd Webber thing too, I was like, oh my, this is actually like, this makes me very proud that I'm making this. And it's one of those where I was like, yeah, pat myself on the back because I did. I thought that was a necessary change, right?
Yeah.
So that's how I approach it.
That is great. And I just love it. What advice will you tell a younger version of yourself now that you've gotten into a place in your career in which you are happy with it?
I would say to myself, get off your ass and create now. Listen, a lot of us do this. Like, this is not singular to me. This is not even singular to like, I would say this is not even singular to actors. I feel like, especially when you go through, you know, like higher education and whatever, you go into the world with this like mentality that you are going to put yourself out there and then wait for people to give you permission.
Yeah.
To do what it is that you want to do. And that can look like a lot of things. It can look like, for actors, it can look like auditioning and auditioning and auditioning and waiting for somebody to finally say like, yes, you can be an actor here in this role, you know, for 2 weeks, for 3 weeks, for a month, for a year, whatever it might be. But it could also look like, you know, a job or whatever that might be. And it took me a long time to realize that I am a creative person at heart. Like, I've always been creative, even like growing up in Colombia, I was always like, you know, taking things out of the trash and like making something with it, making like art or drawing, or like I was always very innovative and like always thought outside of the box. Mm-hmm. And I kind of lost that after going through training here, because so much of the training is great, like be yourself, show us your trauma, use it, but now fit into this mold.
Yeah.
Right? But now, like, make sure that you're really sticking to this type. Now make sure that you're really singing in this one particular way, because that's the one particular way that's going to get you jobs. Make sure that, like, I mean, even, like, my hair. Like, right now, for people that are listening, like, my hair is buzzed. This is how I like my hair. I don't like having long hair because I'm extremely lazy about hair care. I don't like it. So I would much rather have like bust hair. And every time I spoke to an agent or a manager or casting, it was like, no, you have to keep your long hair because that's the way that's going to make you most castable.
Yeah.
And so I say to young me, like, do what you want. Create what you want, because at the end of the day, they're going to put you in a wig anyway. So it doesn't even matter. It legit doesn't even matter. Like, we just get so caught up on these, like, tiny little things. Whether it's, again, like, oh, I don't have the vibrato that this person has. I don't have the high note that this person has. I don't have the low range that they have. I can't dance. Like, just do you. Create a space for yourself and create work that you're passionate about. So that's what I say.
I agree with you. And it's crazy. It's crazy. So now that you started mentioning how a casting director or how a manager tells you to not change or change how you physically look, what is visibility and representation for you?
Oh, baby. Oof. I mean, listen, like, there's the answer that's like, we want to see more of our stories on the stage. Like, there's that answer, which I think is absolutely true. But for me in particular, and again, because I do have a background in education, to me, it's about decolonizing everything that we know about theater. And I think it starts, like, literally when we're children. I think every single relationship and power dynamic in this industry has to change. And that can look a million different ways. But to me, I'm like, first of all, everybody needs to get paid, because not having people get paid for work is crazy. Like, that is just literally, like, what other career do you work for free? That just, like, makes absolutely no sense. So there's that. There's also, there's a conversation that we need to be having around, like, even colorism when it comes to, and just straight up racism when it comes to our community. You know, recently In the Heights was under fire for that, but I think that it's, like, absolutely the conversation that we need to be having. We need to be having a conversation about around ableism as well, because as an actor, something that's very common here is that, you know, I might get a script on my inbox or whatever, like, at 6 p.m. on a Wednesday, and they say you need to have this in by 12 p.m. on a Thursday, like, less than 24 hours turnaround. Right. And, like, that is incredibly ableist, because it's not allowing someone who might, you know, be, who might have ADHD or who might be neurodivergent. Mm-hmm. Like, we're excluding people because of the systems that are in place. Right. In the same way, auditions are super gendered in a super binary way right now, even still to this day. And so there's got to be a way to change that around too. And so to me, it's all about, like, systems have to change. Power dynamics have to change. We need to realize in very, very big and, like, very dramatic ways that all of us in this business are important and we all need each other. A great example is what's happening right now with Broadway swings and understudies. There's a huge conversation around that. And how they're saving the shows. And I think swings and understudies are absolutely amazing. My very first job professionally was a swing. But I also realized that, like, you know, in my experience, I've also seen a lot of, like, really inhumane treatment towards swings and understudies from my colleagues. And so we need to be looking at that too, you know? And these are all things that, these are all little things that will add up to me in the larger picture to the true achievement of visibility and representation is once we have all these things. And I mean, I'm only speaking about a few. There are hundreds of identities that we haven't even covered in this conversation. So yeah, that's what I think it looks like. I think it has to change from the very beginning.
Yeah. So in that order of ideas, how do you think we can increase Latin visibility and representation on Broadway?
I think that the way to do it for me is that we have to build audiences for it. Right? And so how do we do that? I'm attempting to do it with translations, but, you know, I am just one person. I can only do, like, you know, a few little things, and I only have so much weight that I can carry. So that's like my thing that I'm doing, right? But we mm-hmm. also need to be having, I was in another podcast recently, or I was being interviewed for another podcast, and this idea came up of, like, why are we not doing live musicals like they do for the American market, like on NBC? Why are we not doing that on Telemundo and Univision? Like, actually, Telemundo and NBC are literally the same company. So mm-hmm. why are we not doing, like, In the Heights Live with Bad Bunny as Usnavi, right? Like, where's that? Like, that's how you build, but that might be funny, but, like, that's how you build audiences,
yeah,
right? Like,
absolutely.
Like, think about this. Like, Bad Bunny is the most streamed artist on Spotify, period. Not the most streamed male, not the most streamed mm-hmm. Latin, like, period. So there is a market for media and for representation in arts, you know, whether it's music or movies or music or whatever it might be. But we do need to find a way in. And, like, to me, that's a very clear, like, thing that we could be doing. You know, we could be doing On Your Feet Live on Telemundo, you know, presented by Gloria Estefan. She could be narrating in the back, and you could have the yeah. cast, the same cast from Broadway, do the show live on Telemundo. Like, that's how you do it. And then you're building this, like, excitement for musicals, and you're building, again, you're building an audience that will then be like, oh, well, let me look up, like, what happened when the show was on Broadway. Let me look up clips. And then they run into In the Heights, and then they run into this other thing, and, like, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that's how we achieve it. And, I mean, the other conversation we need to be having is that In the Heights opening, what, 2008? And then On Your Feet open in, what, 2014 or 15? I mean, somebody check the dates for me. Like, my God, we need more. Yeah. You know, my God, we need more Latin composers at the forefront. And I do believe that there are people who have a lot of money who need to be investing in Latin shows. I do believe that. You know, did you know that Thalia was one of the main producers of Summer, the Donna Summer musical?
What? I had no
Mama,
idea.
Get into it. Thalia was one of the main producers of Donna Summer the musical.
Wow.
Which I'm like, okay
that's,
like,
a game changer.
Live queen, because I also love Thalia. But next time, can you pick one of us?
Yeah.
You know, like, I got a list.
Yeah.
You know, let's
yeah, absolutely.
Let's create Marimar the musical.
Okay, so for you, what is the most important part of creating Latin characters in musical theater?
I mean, the most important part of creating Latin characters in musical theater is that they have to be written by Latin and Latine people, right? Like, and again, of all experiences, because yeah. being a Latine person who is, you know, who grew up maybe here, maybe not speaking Spanish, maybe shouldn't be writing, like, an immigrant or a first generation immigrant, right? So we need to be, like, very, very specific about that. And to be clear, I'm not saying that if you don't speak Spanish or not as Latino as, that's not what I'm saying at all. But what I'm saying is that we do have very different experiences, even within the Latine community. Mm-hmm. So we need to, like, respect those boundaries as well, and know that, like, me, like a cisgender person, like, maybe I shouldn't be writing about the trans experience, right? Because, like, I'm not of that experience. And so that's what I think it takes. It takes really including all of us. And here's the thing, including all of us takes a little bit of thinking outside of the box, because mm-hmm. historically, all of us maybe haven't been to, you know, higher education for musical theater writing. Maybe all of us, like, maybe don't have the same, like, resumes that our white colleagues have. So when you're thinking about, even when companies and stuff do, like, open submissions for new work or whatever, you do have to take a chance on people, and you have to look at potential, and you have to look at ideas. Because if you're only looking at accolades, I mean, mathematically speaking, you're already giving an advantage to our white colleagues, right?
Yeah.
So it takes that. That's what it takes.
Yeah. Okay, Luis, if someone wants to work with you, to call you and be like, hey, I want you in this production, be my producer or be my performer, where can they find you?
DM me. Just DM me on Instagram. My DMs are open. You could literally DM me for anything. It is my choice whether I want to respond or not, but you are welcome to send me a message. You can find me at Bilingual Broadway on Instagram, YouTube, Patreon, and what's the other one? Twitter now. I'm changing my Twitter to Bilingual Broadway. So yeah, you can find me. Oh, on Facebook as well. So you can DM me on any of those platforms, and I'm always happy to hear from people and connect people. I love doing that as well. So yes, please message me and let's kiki.
Yes, amazing. Absolutely. And last question before we wrap up, which are your top five favorite musical theater shows?
Why do you do this to me? Top five, I mean, right, so I feel like they change. Right now, I'm probably going to say, this is hard. Okay, so let's include, like, A Sondheim, like, Into the Woods is up there for sure. No, Company. I really like Company. So let's do Company for Sondheim. I really, really love In the Heights, the stage show, not the movie. Sorry about it. I really love Next to Normal. It's one of my favorite shows. I'm also going to say, musically speaking, Bridges of Madison County is like my jam. Like, I love that score. And my absolute favorite show of all time is Jesus Christ Superstar. And I just got to say this for anyone that is listening. I'm 32 now. Jesus was 33. So you have 1 year to cast me as Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar. I do have the range. Please call me up, because that is my favorite show. I could do that show till the day I die. I love it.
Yeah, it's a good choice. It's a good choice. Luis, thank you so much for coming over. I have loved this conversation. Your thoughts about our community in musical theater and on Broadway are super valuable. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're the best. I love what you're doing. I love your hair. For those of you listening, he's got like this blue moment in the hair, and it's just so gorgeous. I love it.
Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of Backstage Talk. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Backstage Talk Podcast.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suffs celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.